Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Chris Newell. I'm one of the partners at the Harbor Group, and I'm joined today by our lead strategist, Robin Gullison. And for those of you who have not had the pleasure of meeting with Robin personally, I'll give you a little bit of his background. Robin spent a decade prior to joining our team working for RBC, specifically focusing on fixed income investments in ever-increasing roles of responsibility. His last posting prior to joining us was that of leading the fixed income desk at RBC Dominion Securities, giving advice to the 1,600 investment advisors across the country. And I mention this in that he has a strong track record and certainly a skill set and capability to give advice on fixed income and fixed income related investments. Over the course of 2016, investing in fixed income markets has been tricky, to say the least, given the low interest rate environment that we've been in, and we've been fielding lots of calls from clients on this specific topic, and so we thought it would be useful to have a broadcast across the client base where you could listen and hear directly from Robin, one of our experts, on this specific topic. So for today, I'm going to ask Robin a number of questions, and these are the questions that we get asked by clients on a frequent basis in an effort to unveil some of the mystery surrounding the fixed income markets these days. So for the first question, Robin, investors who are looking for fixed income from fixed income in their portfolios, what products should they look towards?
Well, that's an interesting question, Chris. You know, the traditional fixed income assets that people used to rely upon for generating steady income don't provide a lot of income anymore. If you look at something like Government of Canada bonds, a five-year bond from the Government of Canada yields under 1%. A 10-year bond yields about 1.5%. These are instruments that even, you know, 7 or 8 years ago would have yielded closer to 4%. So the income available from government bonds isn't really there. These are now more about return of capital than return on capital. So to generate any sort of reasonable income that outdoes inflation and after taxes, the government bond market isn't really going to do it for most people. It's more about preserving capital, and even that in the short term can be at risk because the interest rate risk associated with government bonds is as high as it's ever been. That means for a 10-year Government of Canada bond, if interest rates go up by 1%, the capital value would go down by about 7 to 8%. So with a 1.5% income on top of that, you're still looking at a fairly significant loss over a one-year period if interest rates go higher, which is definitely the risk from the levels we're at now. Similar logic applies to high-quality corporate bonds. You might pick up another 1% or a bit more. So again, that puts us maybe to 2.5 to 3.5%, not the type of income that a lot of people can live off of. High-yield bonds provide attractive income. This is moving a little bit closer to the equity on the risk spectrum, but it still are fixed income payments that these companies have to pay. With all the dislocations in the energy market, the high-yield bond market in general has cheapened up a bit, so that's something we're starting to take a closer look at. And for all the pain that they've put investors through, we actually think the yields available on a lot of preferred shares are quite attractive, and they are dividend income, so, of course, a tax advantage. And lastly, while not fixed income, dividend-paying equities are also a great source of income for investors who can bear that risk.
Thank you. Perhaps you could tell us the risks associated with bonds, GICs, preferred shares, high-yield bonds from this point forward, as you mentioned these as a constituency within the group of fixed income that you'd recommend.
Certainly. So for any fixed income instrument, the two main risks are interest rate risk. So that's the risk that, number one, interest rates move higher and the price of a fixed income security goes down, like in a traditional government bond, or number two, that you have to reinvest at a low rate of interest if a security comes due. The second would be credit risk, so the risk of simply getting your money paid back to you by who you lent it to. And for the Government of Canada and the Canadian provinces, that's not really an issue, nor is it for the large, high-quality corporations. But as you go further down the credit ladder, you have a higher risk of not getting paid back, which is why you get higher yields for companies that have lower credit ratings. So those are the main risks for your traditional bonds. If you go with the GICs, if you're under CDIC coverage, which is guaranteed by the Government of Canada, so that's up to $100,000 principal and interest for any issuer, there is no real credit risk. It'd be the same credit risk as the Government of Canada for the most part. the risk there is more due to the erosion of purchasing power due to inflation and the fact that these are not liquid securities. So if the world changes and you want to sell your GIC to reinvest in something else, that's a little more challenging than it would be with a marketable security like a government bond or a corporate bond. Preferred shares are a bit of a different animal because they have both credit risk and interest rate risk. Preferred shares are only senior to common equity on a company's balance sheet, so they get paid after all the other bondholders get paid. And as far as interest rate risk goes, it depends if you're dealing with a rate reset preferred share or a perpetual preferred share. Rate reset preferred shares are designed with higher interest rates in mind, so lower interest rates have been the risk there, especially material lower interest rates, because as these securities get reset, the coupon goes down to lead to what's at the prevailing market interest rate. With perpetual preferred shares, it's the opposite. Your dividend is locked in for life unless the company decides to call the security. Therefore, the risk is that we get materially higher long-term interest rates. So, for example, right now, a perpetual preferred share yields around 5%, depending on the issuer. The Government of Canada 30-year bond is about 2%. That's a fairly attractive yield pickup to go to a perpetual preferred share. If we got into a world where the 30-year Canada yielded 5%, guaranteed by the Government of Canada, the 5% on a perpetual preferred share wouldn't look quite as attractive, even though it is a dividend, and the prices would likely go lower. So preferred shares, depends on which one you look at. They have both the interest rate and the credit risk associated with them.
Preferred shares have been very prevalent in the market over the course of the last several years as investors scrambled to replace the income on bonds that came due, and from the sounds of it, we're now in a lower interest rate environment. So really two questions. Could you tell us, are we in a different interest rate environment today versus, say, 5 years ago? And the second question is, simply put, are preferred shares going to keep going down?
So on the first question, we are in a markedly different interest rate environment than we were 5 years ago. And you have to remember, 5 years ago was 2010, and we were just coming out of the credit crisis, and interest rates were still very low. But since then, they've gone even lower, particularly long-term interest rates. And the big event this year was the drop in oil prices and the interest rate cuts by the Bank of Canada to try and deal with the economic fallout from that. So in this era of central banking, central bankers usually give markets very fair warning ahead of any changes in monetary policy. The Bank of Canada went a little bit of a different way this year and cut interest rates in January without anything really telling anybody or giving anybody a heads up, and that led to a very violent market reaction. And it led interest rates on, say, a five-year Canada bond, they would have ended the year around 1%. I think they went as low as about 0.6%. They now sit at 0.8. To put this in context, the U.S. five-year yield is about 1.5%. U.S. rates are currently at zero, expected to go up slightly, and until recently they were printing money. In Canada, we're at 0.5% overnight rate, may go lower, may not, and we're at a 0.8% five-year yield in Canada. So we think five-year yields in Canada are quite extremely low, and that's led to a big effect on the rate reset preferred share market. Rate reset preferred shares were conceived in 2007 after yields backed up on the longer end of the yield curve and made perpetual preferred shares unattractive, as I alluded to earlier, due to the effect of rising long-term rates on perpetual preferred shares. Everybody back then was worried about rising interest rates, just as they are today. So they created a rate reset preferred share, which had a feature that after 5 years, your coupon would get reset at the prevailing government bond interest rate plus a fixed spread or a fixed interest rate. Let's call it 2%, which is fairly typical. So when bond yields were around 2% on a five-year Canada, if you came up for reset, you'd get reset at a dividend of about 4%, which is pretty typical for these securities. This year, a lot of securities that were issued in 2010 when five-year Canada rates were about 2.5% have come up for reset when the five-year Canada has been at 0.6 to 0.7. So those 4%+ dividends have turned around to be, 2.5%. And unlike government bonds and corporate bonds where the yields kind of all move together, the preferred share market's dominated by retail investors and they're focused on the all-in yield. They don't really care as much about the yield relative to Government of Canada bonds like corporate bond investors do. So people are very reluctant to buy preferred shares at a yield materially under 4%. So as these dividends got reduced in line with their contractual obligations down to the mid-2s, people who were going to buy them in the secondary market still wanted to have a yield of around 4%, and therefore the price, unfortunately, has gone lower, sometimes substantially so on some of these, to keep those yields in line. The question being, are they going to keep going down? From this point now, it seems fairly unlikely that the Government of Canada yields are going to go substantially lower than they have now. If you look at the U.S., again, in the U.S., the lowest their five-year rate got was about 0.5%. That's when their rates were at zero and they were printing money. So unless the Government of Canada, or pardon me, the Bank of Canada does what the Europeans have done and go to negative interest rates, it's hard to see the five-year Canada yield going significantly lower and staying there for a long period of time. Obviously, anything can happen during a market panic, but just looking at the fundamentals and the outlook for the Bank of Canada and RBC's forecast, it seems unlikely. So from here forward, what's going to happen to these? Well, if interest rates go higher, holding all else equal, rate reset preferred shares could do well because all the things that have been working against them start working for them. So the fear that they're going to get reset at very low interest rates, as interest rates go higher, obviously any reset would be higher than it was previously. And if interest rates go a lot higher, let's say they go to 1.5% from where they are now, you start to price in the possibility that some of these rate reset preferred shares maybe get called at some point at 25. Some of these are trading under 20, so if that were to happen, there'd be a fairly high potential for strong capital gains. The risk would be, number one, that rates go lower than they are here and stay there, and number two, that you get some sort of credit event, so where credit spreads go much wider, i.e. the premium people demand for buying corporate debt over government debt goes a lot higher, like you saw going into the credit crisis.
Is there any historical precedent to this, Robin? Have we seen this before? And I ask this because many clients look at the fixed income component of their portfolio and by extension preferred shares and are a little shell-shocked to see the capital value having gone down to the extent that it did. Have we seen this before? Is this something that can be recovered from?
We have seen this before. I'd say the closest historical precedent would be during the financial crisis. You know, like every other non-government bond asset, preferred shares were hit hard during the financial crisis. As conditions normalized, they recovered, and some of these perpetual preferred shares from back then that traded as low as, you know, the low double digits have actually traded at par and been called since then. So there is a historical precedent. For the rate reset preferred shares to bounce back, the biggest thing we need to see is interest rates go higher. And from here, even if they were to stay here, a lot of these are trading now like interest rates are going to stay low forever and trading at very attractive yields. And I think there's two distinct things happening here. Number one, the rate reset preferred shares that are up for reset this year should be trading lower in value because they're getting reset, unfortunately, at a historically extremely, extremely low interest rate. But the market's also taken preferred shares that don't get reset for 3, 4, 5 years and treating them as if they face that risk imminently when they don't. And therefore, investors who buy them now can lock in quite attractive yields and don't face any reset risk for over 3 years, which we think under any reasonable scenario for interest rates should prove quite well for them.
Also with sticking with the theme on preferred shares, a common question amongst preferred shareholders is, I bought these vehicles for income and now my capital value is down. And why is this and what can I do about it?
So I've got some statistics to kind of speak to this a little bit. You know, 5 years ago, the five-year Canada yield was 2.57%. Today it's about 0.8%, so down about 70%. The average five-year GIC was 337 back then. Today it's 194. It's down 42%. And a benchmark preferred share from that era would be the Emera A preferred share. It was issued at a 4.4% dividend. It got recently reset a couple months ago at 2.555, and that's also down 42%. Now, of course, the big difference is that on the government bonds and the GIC, they've since matured, you've gotten your capital back, and you've been able to reinvest at these lower interest rates. So as far as the cash flows go on the preferred shares, it's actually a similar dynamic to what we've seen in government bonds, but that's obviously a little consequence when you're staring at what's happened to the capital value. And the big question is, what can we do about it? Well, I think selling down here in a distressed market, unless you're doing some sort of tax loss switch trade, isn't the best way to get your capital back. Again, our opinion is that these are one of the few securities out there that has leverage to rising interest rates, and that's why they're in a lot of portfolios, is that almost everything out there today, we have very, you know, dividend-centric portfolios for a lot of our clients, bonds in a lot of portfolios, and all of those things don't necessarily do that well if interest rates go higher, especially if they go sharply higher in an unexpected manner. The rate reset preferred shares, because of the reset feature, at the most you're locked in for 5 years at the current interest rate. And if they go higher, they could either A, get called, or B, reset at the higher interest rate. So these are in there as a component of the portfolio, a rare one. that should do well if interest rates go higher. And that's what we need to see here to get that capital value back up to where we think it should be. Now, there's been a lot of damage done. There's going to be a lot of negative sentiment, as we've seen. And there's going to be more negative sentiment probably through the end of the year as people do tax loss selling. Again, we would advocate doing a tax loss switch to maintain exposure to the asset class to keep that exposure for if and when interest rates go higher. But some people may just be selling them outright and getting out and saying they can't take it anymore because they don't understand what these securities can do on the way up if interest rates change. So our view would be take advantage of any taxable trades we can do to lower people's tax bills, but getting out down here to us doesn't seem like the best way to preserve value.
So, you know, in a nutshell, specifically, what would you recommend for investors who hold preferred shares? Should they hold them? Should they sell them and just be done with it and move on? Or should they buy more?
Well, my experience has been that selling a distressed asset usually doesn't work out well in the long term. It might feel good to do it and just get it out of the portfolio so you don't have to look at it anymore. But usually when it hurts the most is often the worst time to sell. So my advice would be to hold on. And for those who have the capacity to add more of these to their portfolio, we think there are opportunities out there that are quite attractive where you can lock in strong yields, buy these at deeply discounted prices, and again, increase that protection in the portfolio if interest rates go higher. And then, as I said before, I can't think of any other non-derivative or complicated asset class that can provide that kind of exposure in portfolios for our clients.
For clients who are looking for income of, say, 3-4% within the fixed income component of their portfolio, what options are there?
Your options would be buying 30-year corporate bonds. So those are securities that if interest rates go up 1%, you lose probably 15-18%. And you'd have to wait 30 years to get your money back. That's where, you know, these are assets that used to yield probably 5-6% a few years ago. Now it's about 4 for a high-quality 30-year corporate bond. You look for the high-yield bond market, which is going to yield at around the 6% range. Or you could look at the preferred share market. So we could put together a diversified portfolio of REIT reset preferred shares that don't reset on average for about 3.5 years. And the yield we think you'd get over the next 3+ years is about 5.5% dividend. And these are all trading at big discounts. If they were to get reset today, at today's low interest rates, you would have a yield of about 4.75%. So I won't call that the worst case scenario, but that'd be a pretty bad scenario. And if interest rates go to anywhere approaching normal, call it 1.5%, and they all reset with the 5-year Canada at 1.5%, your income would be similar to what it would be today, but you'd likely see some capital appreciation because, again, the probability of them getting called and the higher yields you'd see on the resets would prompt people back into the market.
It sounds like the alternatives for getting 3-4% in income are either preferred shares, high-yield bonds, or very long-term bonds. What are the tax attributes of those three different investments? Is there an advantage to buying one over the other?
So when you look at the long-term government, long-term corporate bonds, most of those are going to be trading at very large premiums that would have been issued in the last few years. And so number one, you're paying tax, your full marginal rate on the interest. And number two, the write-off you get on the premium of a bond doesn't fully compensate for the extra tax you're paying on that above market coupon. So bonds are going to be the least tax attractive, and preferred shares are going to be, of course, the most tax attractive because they have dividend income. And for a lot of the rate resets that are trading at discounts, again, you have the potential to add a capital gain in there, which is much more attractive when it comes to the taxation. But obviously that's not a guaranteed part of the return. That's kind of something we hope to get if markets go our way and rates go back to where we think they should be. But that's much more tax attractive than buying a long-term corporate bond that has an above-market coupon. And the high-yield bond market would be similar. You know, probably not as many big premiums in the high-yield bond market, but it's going to be all interest income.
So what's the direction of interest rates at this stage? Is there any reprieve on the horizon for investors who are seeking income from their fixed income portfolios?
In the United States, yes. The Federal Reserve seems fairly determined to raise interest rates at some point this year. The wide-ranging debate as to whether it will be next week, October or December, but they seem like they want to do it. How far they go from there is an open question. So U.S. cash has been one of the most challenging places for us to find investments that show any kind of yield for investors. So the Fed raising rates, you know, setting aside what it might do to markets in general as far as volatility goes, definitely helps people with U.S. cash. In Canada, the Bank of Canada has cut rates twice this year. They met earlier this week. They did not cut them again. I think if the oil price stabilizes or goes higher, or we start to see more of a boost from our export sector, which we've started to see the kind of early days of, then maybe they hold off and stay where they are. But, you know, the yield people have gotten on cash in the Bank of Canada has gone down by almost half this year. So it's gone, you know, they were paying 1%, now they're paying 0.5%. So the direction of interest rates in Canada have been down, but I think the way it typically works is that really short-term yields, so 3-month T-bills, 1-year T-bills, 2-year bonds, move very much with what the Bank of Canada is doing and what the expectation for the Bank of Canada is doing. So those rates are probably pinned fairly low for a while here. As you get to the longer end of the yield curve, 10-year bonds and 30-year bonds, which I realize not a lot of people own, those are driven by more by expectations for economic growth, inflation, and just general risk aversion and what we see in the U.S. Treasury market. So that's, in Canada, the longer-term rates would probably trade more with what's happening in the U.S. When you go to 5-year bonds, that's a little bit of a mix of both. When interest rates are really, really, really low and expected to stay there for a long time, 5-year bonds trade much more closely with the outlook for the Bank of Canada than they typically do. But if you see a really big move in U.S. rates, I'd imagine it's going to drag the 5-year rate up with it, and that's what we've seen here in the last little while.
Robin, as we wrap up today, you know, what's the bottom line? You've got a captive audience who are listening to what you're talking about with regards to fixed income. Any parting words that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. I'd like to say that, you know, the government bond market has gone from risk-free return to return-free risk, I would say. In an equity market meltdown, that's definitely going to be something that performs well. But if we do see economic growth come through stronger, if we do see central banks start to raise interest rates, if we do see inflation, there are definitely risks there. Just to give you a bit of an idea, again, I mentioned earlier that if interest rates go up by 1%, the 10-year Canada bond price goes down by about 7 to 8, and your yield's 1.5. If you go back 20 years ago, the yield was 6, and the sensitivity to interest rates was about 6. So if interest rates went up by 1%, you're basically flat. Now if they go up by 1%, you're down by 5%. So the risk has really changed. And again, the returns are very low. Now there are always going to be a spot in portfolios for these as a risk management tool and to hedge against equity volatility. But for people looking for income, it's not going to do it. I think the preferred share market, again, as painful as it's been, and I know it's been hard out there for a lot of people, that's where the opportunity is right now. And sometimes it's the kind of hardest places to invest where you find the opportunity. And again, there's very few things out there that are going to benefit if interest rates go up. This is one of the only ones that's available to retail investors in any sort of easy accessibility, and I think that's where the opportunity is now.
Terrific. Well, on behalf of all of us here at the Harbor Group of RBC Dominion Securities, we thank you for dialing in. We thank you for your business, and we do invite you to call us directly with any follow-up questions that you may have. And Robin, thanks very much for your time today. We wish you a good day.